حناني وإن أذنبت رجاني وإن أدبرت ناداني وإن أقبلت أدناني وإن أحببت والاني وإن
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to our program. We have a very special guest with us today and a very special topic. Our guest is Mr. Ahmed Hanif, Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, I should say. And our topic is acting in accordance with the Sunnah. Assalamu alaikum to you, Sheikh.
Thank you very much. Wa alaikum salam.
How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
We want to discuss acting in accordance with the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet and the Imams. Can you tell us first, what is the Sunnah? What do we mean by the Sunnah?
Well, before I speak about the Sunnah, I'd like to mention what Sunnah means in a generic sense.
Good idea.
A Sunnah is any practice instituted by someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Islam, we have two types of Sunnah that have been discussed. One of them is Sunnah in the specific sense, which is what we call the Sunnah, meaning the practice of the Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salam, with respect to different situations. You know, their practice on the domestic front, how they lived, how they drank, how they ate. On the social level, how they related with friends, how they related with the general society, how they related with their family, their children, and so forth. And also on the, for example, political level, or on the battlefield and so on, the ethics and conduct and so forth on the battlefield, and in politics that have established a sort of model for the Muslims to follow.
Okay.
So this is the specific aspect of the Sunnah. The Sunnah in the general sense is any practice that people, a human being, institutes that other people follow after that. So, for example, we have a hadith by the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi, where he says, whoever institutes a good sunnah, okay, a good practice, and other people after him follow in that practice, he will get a reward for the people who are practicing that practice without any reduction of their rewards. In other words, he'd get a reward, but what reward he gets wouldn't mean that it's subtracted from their reward. And he says that anyone who institutes an evil sunnah or an evil practice, and other people follow that person in that evil practice, that person will also get the burden of the evil of that practice without any diminution of the burden of that the recompense for that practice among people.
So I guess it's good for us then to be always trying to practice, have good habits, and to do practice good actions then.
Yes,
because there is lots of reward in that.
I think so. And not only this, but it is also good for us to invent good practices.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
That we should be trying to always do good things and come up with good ideas.
Come up with good ideas, right? Good practices for people to follow, yes.
How far can we take that, though?
As far as we can, because when you look at it, human social situations vary so much. New situations always arise. You know, I mean, if we compare, for example, our life in the 21st century to, let's say, maybe two centuries ago, there are many, many new environmental types of changes that require changes in our behavior. As you know, the environment influences human behavior.
Okay, but now, when we start to think about new inventions and new ideas and new ways of doing things, I think we will start to find ourselves putting a value judgment on these activities. Should we really be trying to find new ways of doing things, or maybe trying to stick to old tried and true methods of doing things?
I think, you know, some things never change, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, in some basic types of relationships, let's say with our families, with our friends, you know, with elders and so forth, right? I mean, many of these things never change. But for example, let's say, how do you behave on a highway, you know, when you are driving from point A to point B, you know,
mm-hmm.
and there are other motorists on the highway, you see? I mean, if you look back at the Sunnah, okay, it is
okay.
not confronted with that environmental
When you say the
novelty.
Sunnah, you mean the practice of the Holy
of the
Prophet.
Exactly,
okay.
right? It is, you're not confronted with that environmental novelty,
mm-hmm.
you know. How do you behave when you're checking out at the cash register, for example? You know, these are all novel situations.
The cell phone.
Right, no, yes, exactly, right? How do you, I mean, recently in a newspaper we saw, I read about a cashier who refused to serve a woman who was checking out
and
while she was on the cell phone.
Talking on the cell phone, yeah.
Okay, and
that
was a big topic of
okay.
discussion, right? About whether it is rude or not rude, okay, to be on a cell phone while you're checking out at the cash register. You know, in terms of being rude to the cashier, you see?
Yes.
Now, this is a novel situation,
mm-hmm.
okay? So if somebody, for example, you know, invents a practice, you see, where, for example, you excuse yourself, you see, or you pay some regard to the cashier while you're on a cell phone,
okay,
and other people catch on to this, you know, this is a good sunnah that you have instituted.
Okay.
You see? And this is what I think Islam is also encouraging you to do as well.
What about if we decide not to even bother with certain things? Say like the cell phone, it can be very disruptive into our present day lives.
Right.
Should we go ahead and adopt these new practices as they are invented and everybody is holding on to them? Or should we try to stick to more people-friendly sort of values, you know, to the tried and true ways of living?
Well, yes, I think what I get what you're saying is that to minimize
mm-hmm.
the intrusion of modern technology in human relations.
Yes.
Okay. I think that too is a possible sunnah that we could that can be invented. That's
mm-hmm.
a good one that people can follow. But that aside, okay, what do we do when it's on, you know, when it has to be on,
mm-hmm.
right? How do you relate between that and other people, you
mm-hmm.
see? And I think that also is a sunnah as well. So, you know, one can say there is a sunnah that can be devised with respect to you know, minimizing the intrusion, okay?
Of modern technology in our lives.
Right? Another is when you are engaged with it,
okay?
What are the ethics or the good behaviors that you can have with it while you're relating to other people?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always relating to other people involved.
Yes, I think that's a wonderful thing for us to really think about and contemplate about. But I think we should take a short break, and when we come back, we can continue more about this topic about living in accordance with the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet.
تفوح روائح الريحان be your lifestyle in terms of clothing as a Muslim in the West?
Okay. In the West, obviously, it's quite difficult to be quite modest and moderate with your clothing because obviously with work and university and school, with schools you have uniforms, so it's quite difficult to wear a special type of clothing. But personally, me, you know, there's different types of hijabs in London. You know, there's people who just wear a headscarf and normal clothing. There's people that wear chadors, niqabs. There's every single type of hijabs you can think of there is in the UK. Personally, me, myself, I'd wear something that's quite long, that's quite modest, but quite in fashion as well. Like, nothing too much, but something that's moderate and modest and in fashion as well.
As a Muslim living in a Western society, and actually as a Muslim living anywhere else, it's the same. We have to dress modestly. We have to dress in a way that is appropriate, that is not indecent. Every society has different norms and different traditions, and it's okay to apply those traditions. For example, you can wear Western clothes in the West as long as they're modest and they don't show your body, it's fine.
What would be your lifestyle of clothing as a Muslim in the West?
Muslims in the West have to abide by a type of clothing that their religion requires them to do so. That is appropriate clothing in which they preserve modesty in their everyday behavior.
Well, I work in a Muslim school, so I wear, I wear the hijab anyway, but I wear an abaya and an English dress underneath. Even when I go out, I wear the hijab. There are no inhibitions, there are no problems wearing the hijab in the West. You're free to dress as you wish. In this country, it's very tolerant. And indeed, there are no problems.
What is the Islamic standard of clothing?
Islamic standard of clothing is different from men to women for obvious reasons. For women, it is to preserve the Islamic hijab. And for men, there is also an Islamic hijab, believe it or not. The Islamic hijab for men involves them to not only wear modest clothing, but also to lower their gaze when observing women.
What is the Islamic standard of clothing?
I think the Islamic standard of clothing is to be quite modest. I mean, there's not a specific term for hijab. Like, hijab is basically to cover your hair, your body, your figure shouldn't be shown, you know, your arms shouldn't be shown, your legs shouldn't be shown. I think this is hijab, like, and if you can wear it properly, then that's right. I don't think you have to wear a chador or a niqab to make it to be a perfect Muslim.
I think the important thing is that we keep our Islam and our religion alive in this country, even if our culture changes, because it's difficult for us to keep our culture alive in this country. But that's okay, because Islam is a universal religion and you can practice Islam in every culture. So even if we take on this culture, it's okay, as long as we keep our Islam alive. So the important thing is to keep our religion, even in this culture.
What is the Islamic standard of clothing?
The Islamic standard, loose clothing, modest clothing. Women only have to... They're allowed to show their face and their hands. So other than that, loose-fitting clothes are respected.
What about men?
Men, although they have to cover from the navel to the knee, they... as a respectable dress, they wear, you know, trousers and shirts as well.
Welcome back. We are here with Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, and we are talking about living in accordance with the Sunnah. Now, you mentioned that there are various rewards, according to the Holy Prophet, for us when we come up with a new Sunnah, mm-hmm. And there are certain punishments when we encourage people in a bad sunnah.
Right.
Okay, now do we find people in this society inventing new sunnahs?
I think people in society invent new sunnahs or habits, let's say.
Okay.
All the time.
Such as?
For example, in terms of, in many cases where we relate on social situations, I think, for example, let's see, like in the music industry,
mm-hmm.
right? The music industry and famous people, entertainment figures, invent or bring into existence new fashions of clothing, for example.
Okay.
Right? That are followed by masses of youth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember one time there were two young rap artists who made a video where the Kid and Play, I think they were, okay, where they were wearing their denim jeans backwards, and they became a fad, right? A fad is a sunnah, but it is sometimes a short-lived sunnah, mm-hmm. you know? You find that movies, okay, tend to bring into existence certain behavior patterns among people. You know, you find sports personalities, for example, the fashion of shaving one's head, for example, among a lot of, don't look at me like that.
So are you following, are you yourself following somebody sunnah?
It may be, right? You know, the fashion of shaving one's head. Young okay. men shaving one's head, it came out from basketball.
Yeah.
You know okay. what I mean? Right now we have tattooing, you know, as a new way of life or way of displaying oneself in contemporary society. You know, so you see that we do have influences. We do have examples of new ways of life being created all the time. For example, bachelor life,
mm-hmm.
you know, is something very pretty recent in Western culture. You know, it was not as prevalent, I would say, maybe, 50, 60 years ago, you see. But when you look at it, you notice that there are a lot of, I mentioned many negative type sunnahs, really,
okay.
you know, from an Islamic point of view. And this is the unfortunate thing, you know, mm-hmm. that you have a lot of negative type of behaviors being taking place.
Is shaving the head a negative behavior, would you say?
Maybe not in this case.
Okay.
You know, because, I mean, for example, in Islam, we do have this option, mm-hmm. right, of growing the hair long, okay, cutting it short, or shaving it. One of the things that is makruh is to shave part of
your... What do you
mean
by makruh?
Makruh means disliked,
mm-hmm.
okay, is shaving part of the head and leaving the other part.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, so sometimes certain sunnahs that are invented in this society, okay, might be not incompatible with Islamic culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, although they might be coming from a different point of view.
Okay.
You see?
What about culture and sunnah? What is the relation here?
Well, that's a very good question, because one can say culture is the net accumulation of sunnahs of a people.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we are seeing from when we meet another culture, what we notice are patterns of behavior accompanied by a value system within which those patterns of behavior exist that are different to ours.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they might have a different value system. So the patterns of behavior become even more strange to us. Or they might have a common value system, but behave in a different way in accordance to that value system. For example, let's say the principle of marriage. Okay, we all have it, but how the marital ceremony or the rites are performed in one society might be different to those performed in another society.
Okay, what about the Sunnah now of the Holy Prophet? How has that sort of shaped our lives, shaped the lives of Muslims?
Yes.
Or of Muslim society and culture?
I think the Sunnah of the Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, is, one can say, the most determining factor, the highest determining factor of Muslim culture. Muslim culture, to greater or lesser extents, are expressions of, varying expressions of, the prophetic Sunnah, that is colored by the ethnicity and the ethnic flavor of the people that are practicing that Sunnah. Now, when we look at the prophetic Sunnah, it is not just a practice in a vacuum, okay? It is a practice in accordance with a belief system.
Okay.
Where that practice leads you into greater integration with that belief system, okay? And takes you on a higher level in terms of one's perfection within that particular belief system, okay? I think the same principle can be said for non-Islamic sunnahs, yeah? That people act within a particular worldview, rightly or wrongly. They act within a particular worldview. And that action reinforces that worldview or belief system, or is an expression of that worldview or belief system.
To what extent is the are the practices of Muslims today colored by the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet? And how do we know what is the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet?
Well, I think the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet, we know the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet by virtue of two things. One is by virtue of the Prophet himself as a source of the Sunnah, which has been recorded in the books of Hadith and of the Sirah of the Prophet and the Imams. So we read about what they said, what they did, how they behaved in certain situations, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So on that level, we are aware of it as a written text. And we decide to implement it. On the other hand as well, on another level, this is a practice that has been continued from the time of the Prophet to now. In other words, the Muslims at the time of the Prophet imitated his Sunnah, and they passed it down to their children. You know, they spread throughout the world, okay? And they taught other people, or people looked at their behavior and imitated it. You know, so we have really, on two levels, we have sort of like a crystallized Sunnah in books,
okay,
and a living Sunnah as a tradition passed down from Muslim to Muslim.
Okay, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. You just listen to this and we'll be joining you shortly.
Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Afghanistan, but I was born and brought in the UK.
How do you match your culture with Islamic standard of clothing?
With my culture, it's quite different. My family, we have a mixture of people who wear a headscarf, who don't wear a headscarf, are quite religious and are not quite religious. But if I was honest, my culture doesn't really have a role in my clothing, because there's not a specific type of clothing in my culture. Like, anyone wears anything they want.
Muslim clothing has to cover the limits that are set by the Sharia for men and women. That's the minimum. And they also have to be loose. We can't wear something that's tight so people can see our bodies. Apart from that, how we choose to apply those guidelines is up to us, and it can change with every culture, and that's fine.
How you can match your culture with Islamic standard culture of clothing?
Well, Islam does not seek to change people's culture. Islam is a universal religion, and all cultures respect modest dress. England, the United Kingdom, is predominantly a Christian country, and even in Christianity, modest clothing is appreciated. If you look at all the pictures and portraits of Lady Mary, you will always see her, with loose clothing, draped from head to toe.
Could your lifestyle of clothing represent your religion in the West?
Not necessarily. I mean, with religion, religion celebrates and embraces cultures. And with different cultures, there are different dress senses. And that is something that is celebrated and accepted in Islam. So for different people, they may dress in certain ways within certain general guidelines that are practiced within the Islamic religion.
Could your lifestyle of clothing represent your religion in the West?
Yes, it could. If right now, when I walk out with this sort of clothing, people recognize me as a Muslim girl, as a Muslim person. They do recognize me. It does standardize that I'm a Muslim.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the hijab is definitely a symbol of Islam. So, your women who wear the hijab are like ambassadors of Islam. But the hijab is not just clothes, it's the way you talk, the way you walk, the way you interact with people. That is the whole hijab. The way you look at people, even the hijab of the eye, is very important as well. So it's like a whole encompassing way of life.
How you can match your culture of clothing with the Islamic standard?
Yeah, as long as it fits the general frameworks of what is accepted in terms of the ahkam in Islam, clothing is something that is based on the opinion of those wearing it.
Living in a Western society, they're very tolerant of faiths. And I think they're more tolerant than lots of Muslim countries. Some countries, for example, forbid women to drive. In this country, there are no inhibitions as to how you dress. No one dictates what you should wear, what you shouldn't wear. So, it's very liberating country.
Welcome back. Glad you could join us again. We're here with Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, and we're talking about the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet and acting in accordance with it. Now, what about differences? Okay, now the Holy Prophet lived so many years ago in the 7th century. We are here in the 21st century. There are things that we no longer do the way that they were done then. What about that? What about that difference that time and developments have allowed to take place? How do we How do we weigh these things and act in the right way?
Right. I think one of the most important distinctions that we need to make with respect to the Sunnah and following the Sunnah is that following the Sunnah takes place either on a literalistic level, okay, a fundamentally outward level,
okay,
and also on the level of principle.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, one could look at the Sunnah as something to practice just like how the Holy Prophet practiced it, just like how he did it.
How should we determine which path to take, the literalistic path or the path of the principles?
Okay. I think it all depends upon the environment,
mm-hmm,
okay, and the tools we have at our disposal.
Okay.
For example, the Prophet would have had a sunnah with respect to riding an animal. Okay? Today, except for equestrian events and so forth, we no longer ride animals as a means of conveyance from one place to another.
Okay.
Okay? So in a situation like that, what you take from that sunnah is the principle of it, rather than the outward action, the described action of it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So for example, you know, he would have said the person riding should always give salams to the person sitting, okay, or the person that is not riding.
Okay.
Okay. So it also it depends on how fast you're going in your car,
mm-hmm,
right? But this is a principle that we have. Or, for example, that the person riding should always be willing to assist somebody with their mount, with his mount, in going from one place to another. Okay, so that we could use our cars for things like that. But here's a situation where, for example, the outward environmental or technological environment has changed so much that particular aspect of the Sunnah might be only applicable in terms of its principles, or it might not even have a role at all.
Okay, but look, you have societies, Christian groups, mm-hmm, that try to live in accordance with what they see as maybe their prime state.
Like the Amish and these types of people.
Okay, yeah. Like that. Should Muslims be doing that too? Trying to live in accordance with, say, what was maybe the best of the era of the Holy Prophet?
Like, for example, for freezing your society in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we live in a kind of like a Medina-type environment.
Mm-hmm.
No cars, no gas stoves, no electricity, and so forth.
Yeah.
I don't think it can happen. I don't think it can happen. I think these societies do exist, okay? But these societies exist because they are underdeveloped.
They're not Islamic societies. Is there any Islamic society like that? I doubt it. I haven't heard of any. Are there any groups of Muslims that try to live like that?
I think there have been communes of Muslims that have cropped up from time to time.
Okay.
I know there was one that was attempted in Texas, you know, a couple of decades ago, I think.
Okay.
Right? But they tend to be short-lived.
Okay.
And they definitely would use modern technology. They would have television sets.
We just can't get rid of the cell phone and the computer and things like that.
Yeah, not just that. You know, I mean, you know, technology itself,
mm-hmm,
is a type of culture, is an expression of culture.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You see? And we do belong to a particular technological age that is the product of a cultural environment that we are part of, you know. So I don't think we can do this. I don't think we can do this, right? But I think...
So we have to apply the principles, basically.
We have to apply the principles, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I think, you know, what we realize is that for some Muslims, they tend to, in an environment that demands a principled look at the Sunnah, okay, rather than a literalistic look at the Sunnah. You have some Muslims who sort of like stress the literalism, the literalistic aspect of it, you know, and use that as a criterion to judge whether, you know, how Muslim somebody is. You know, okay. There's a hadith by Imam Ali alayhi salam that actually condemns that. You know, he says, when you look at the hadith, the most ignorant person would follow the literal aspect of the hadith, whilst the most learned person would follow the principles behind that particular hadith, you see? And so you have this type of, atmosphere today, especially amongst mm-hmm. groups of Muslims.
Okay, so what about this clash then? How do we determine what to take as literal and what to take the principles from?
Well, I think, you know, especially with respect to the environment and, you know, something I think...
Should we dress like the Prophet then?
Exactly. You see, I mean, look, I think that the principle of anything is the most superior, the most subtle part of that thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so...
But surely there are some things we can take literally. How do we determine which ones?
It depends upon if the conditions for the action has not changed. Take, mm-hmm. for example, eating food.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't think... in the far future, we would stop eating food, you know, by using our hands to put food to our mouths, right? So in eating food, there would be no change in the sunnah.
Okay.
You always should eat with your right hand, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, you should always eat that which is closer to you than that which is further away from you. You should try to eat in community with other people rather than alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these things will not change in terms of eating food, right? In terms of our toilet habits, for example, okay? We would always be doing this, right? Nothing changes, right? You know, in terms of a lot of personal activity, very little changes. In terms of dress, for example, okay? There are changes. For example, the dress of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi is a dress that was suited to the clime of that time. Okay? The dress of, let's say, people who were living in Norway or people who were living in, let's say, a more lush, you know, forested area or something, you know, would be different than in that particular clime. So one would expect dress to change.
But we find Muslims who live in various Western societies dressing just like they dress, like the Holy Prophet dressed in his time.
I think that in itself is a sort of literalistic application.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because dress not only reflects your environment, okay, it reflects your activities in your environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, from a strictly Sunnah point of view, from the point of view of the principle of the Sunnah, what it tells you basically is do not dress in any kind of ostentatious fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Dress in a decent manner. They cover mm-hmm. the shape of your body, for example.
Okay.
You know, and this could be applied with any dress, whether it be Chinese, mm-hmm. whether it be Eskimo, whether it be, you know, the Arab, mm-hmm. and so forth.
Okay. And also not to draw attention to yourself.
But not to draw excessive attention to yourself.
Excessive
yes.
attention.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh. It's been nice talking to you. We are going to continue this discussion in further programs, but our time is up for now. So please join us for another program where we'll continue to talk about living in accordance with the Sunnah. Thank you for joining us.